Welcome to episode 31 of The Mark of a Druid. I'm your author and narrator, Rhonda R. Carpenter. Please, do me a favor and leave a comment, post a review, or rate the book. Visit my websites at themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. And, as always, tell a friend. Now on to our story. James and Lori spent the entire night in the clinic, copying every file and downloading all of the critical data from the computers. They gathered all the session videotapes and boxed them. When the building superintendent arrived at 6:30 in the morning, Lori had him open the basement storage unit for the clinic. They stored the data away. Exhausted, they locked up and drove to Lori's place, where they fell into bed, clutched in each other's arms. Andrea was face down on the sofa, and Eve was collapsed on the chair when Richard and Tom walked in the front door. Two or three notes played on the stereo. Then the tape clicked off. Both women stirred, eyelids fluttering open. Tom stood gaping at them as if he'd caught them doing something unspeakable.
"What the hell?"
"Dad," Richard drew out the name.
"Don't cuss."
"You're right," he ruffled his son's hair. "Andrea, are you all right? You look white as a sheet."
"Yeah. Must have fallen asleep. Sorry, I meant to call you."
She stretched her hands over her head. "And you, Eve? You just napping, too?" Before she answered, Andrea spoke up. "I need you to take Richard for a few days."
"Sure, no problem.
Hey, kid, go get some clothes. And don't use that arm."
"Yes, sir."
He wagged his head and shuffled his feet as he went to his room. Tom lowered his voice.
"What's going on?"
"Eve's house burned to the ground. And Cosmo was killed." The last came out in a whisper as she glanced toward the hall, afraid Richard was listening. Tears welled up in Eve's eyes.
"Oh, God, Eve, I'm so sorry. How did it happen?"
"They don't know. Excuse me."
She sidestepped the conversation and went to the bathroom. "Tom, I wish that was the half of it, but, well, it's not. Do you remember Lisa Montgomery? One of the researchers for that thing she's working on, right?" He tilted his head in the direction of the bathroom.
"Mm-hmm. She was killed by a drive-by shooter. And there's this crazy bitch that is trying to take the project from Eve. I'm taking her to see an attorney first thing in the morning."
"Did someone put the juju on her? Jeez." He smiled, but Andrea did not smile back. "Until we get some answers, I want Richard with you. He's already been burned, and I won't have him hurt again." He rolled his eyes.
"One has nothing to do with the other, Andrea."
Yeah, I know that."
Richard bounced into the room, dragging a bulging backpack.
"Give me a kiss, you."
She rustled her arms around him.
"Is the burn better? You want to see it?"
"It's gonna leave a really cool scar," he said.
"Yeah, you should look at it. The dang thing looks like a tree," Tom said.
"Nuh-uh. It looks like the sun with three legs."
He pulled back the bandage. She gingerly held his wrist.
"Definitely cool,"
she nodded, but her gut turned in circles and threatened to invade her throat. It was like Eve's mysterious birthmark, but more a brand than something natural. The color drained from her face. David arrived at Samantha's house just after 2 a.m. He was tired, and his face was a disaster. He feared how she would respond to his new look.
"Oh, well," he thought. "There's always plastic surgery."
He knocked at the door a bit apprehensively.
"Enter."
Her voice was hard. The door swung open and she laid there on the sofa, a pillow under her head and a black lace negligee barely covering her breasts. She opened her lips to speak, but he cut her off.
"First, let me explain. The fucking cat attacked me."
He grimaced and rushed on, one hand on his face.
"I had to kill the son of a bitch."
Samantha covered her mouth as she laughed.
"Serves that nasty little animal right."
She inspected the claw marks that ran the length of his face.
"Then I couldn't find one of the tapes. And, well, I burned down her house. That should destroy any chance someone else has of finding it."
"Yes,
I know, my pet. What about the tapes you gave to Lori, James, and Beth? I'll get those while they're at work tomorrow. I can't very well go in looking like this, can I? No, you can't. In the morning, call in. Make up some excuse. But make damn sure that you get them all. And Andrea? One brow lifted in question. She's not involved in the project. There's no need to rush it. Samantha's face showed concern for a moment as she tapped her index finger to her lips. Get it. I don't want any fuck-ups. He moved toward her and kneeled at the end of the sofa. I'll get it, my queen. He leaned toward her. Wait. First, before I reward you for your night's work, you must promise one more thing. I wish you to swear on your soul, if you have one. Swear you'll never reveal me to anyone. You must protect your queen. On my very soul, I'd never betray you. I'd die first. I swear it. Sergeant Steve Harris had his team in the debris of Eve's house at the crack of dawn. They took pictures of the jimmied back door. The bulk of the top floor was intact, though there was nothing left of the office. He wondered why the one-bedroom door was closed, and all the others had been left open. And that was the room where the cat was found. The master bedroom was only smoke and water damaged, so it wasn't a total loss. The team bagged the comforter due to the obvious bloodstains. They lifted prints from the doorknob. He took the leather-bound journal from the bedside with gloved hands. Bag this, too, after you check for prints, he instructed one of the assistants. He followed the fire's path in reverse. There was a charred broom handle laying at the bottom of the staircase. Funny place for a broom to be, he thought. Smoke streaks blackened the walls in a detectable pattern. His search ended in the gutted rear bedroom. It started here. He pointed to the area around a window, then swiped two fingers across the black scorch marks. Harris sniffed at his fingers and muttered to himself, "Not electrical." Back at the coroner's office, Harris had requested a cause of death on the animal. The coroner brought in a vet to do the work. He spoke into a mic. Postmortem case number 04231014, blunt force trauma to the skull. He lifted the paws and extracted samples from each claw. Broken and missing claws would indicate a struggle. He removed a small vacuum tube from the tray of instruments and collected samples from the cat's fur. He clipped a bloody patch at the nape of its neck. One hand felt the cat's chest cavity. While replacing the vacuum with the other hand, he grabbed the scalpel. All the ribs are broken on the right side of the body, and the skull is fractured. Brain hemorrhage is the most likely cause of death. Not smoke inhalation? Harris asked. No way. This animal was beaten with a big stick. Thanks, Marshal. Harris returned to his office. A box of evidence was already on his desk with all of the items that had been dusted for prints, including the cassette tape discovered under the cat. A coincidence? He thought while he opened the baggie and extracted the tape. No label, he mumbled as he turned it over in his hand and set it aside on top of the plastic bag. Harris pulled the journal from the box and thumbed through the pages. You look bloody knackered, Craig blurted out as Ryerson approached him in the hotel lobby. We ready to sign this contract? He blew off Craig's comment with a smile and a wink. You ready to become very wealthy, old man? Craig asked. Things are never going to be the same. They sure as hell aren't. Craig laughed uproariously. Head to head with the big boys, Rye. It's what we've dreamt about. Ryerson had promised himself he wasn't going to think about Eve the moment he picked himself up off the floor. But there she was again, in his mind. He squeezed the back of his neck. The hot shower had done little to relieve the kink, and he stretched it as they walked out to the limo the company had sent for them. Ian Fitzsimmons met them in the reception area. He clapped them both on the shoulders and escorted them to the conference room. RJ grinned from ear to ear as they entered. When the dozen or so businessmen were greeted and seated, Ryerson wasted no time in getting to the point. Mr. Fitzsimmons, Craig and I would like to thank you for the 24 hours you graciously extended to us to consider your offer. He pulled a pen from his breast pocket at the same time Craig did. Ian, please, my father is Mr. Fitzsimmons.
Pearly teeth flashed in their direction. Silence fell over the boardroom while the documents were signed and notarized. A string of congratulations and can't wait to work with you comments circled around the room. A bottle of champagne was cracked open and glasses were filled.
To lifetimes of success,
Ian toasted. His ring flashed in the light. Ryerson was mesmerized. He knew it had belonged to the King of Erin. He white-knuckled his glass with one hand and the table with the other.
Here, here,
Craig tapped his glass against Ryerson's. RJ pulled two silver envelopes engraved with shimmering black lettering from inside his jacket and slid them across the table.
Tonight we celebrate. My wife has planned an intimate soiree in honor of both of you.
This gentleman will require a tuxedo. Patricia doesn't understand the term casual.
I'm pretty sure she doesn't acknowledge the words intimate and soiree in connection either,
Ian laughed.
Trust me, you won't be disappointed.
A glint flashed in his emerald eyes.
Wouldn't miss it, right, Rye?
Craig nudged his elbow.
We'll be there. Where can a bloke, pick up a tuxedo in this city?
The limo driver's been given a list of the best places. Now go spend some of your newfound millions.
RJ drained his glass.
The limo is at your disposal. We'll see you tonight. Andrea and Eve left the attorney's office before noon. He contacted the district attorney and a plan was set in motion to remove Samantha from the clinic staff. And, Andrea hoped, the population as a whole. Eve walked the world in a haze. Andrea was trying to snap her out of it, but was having little success. Her cell rang.
This is Andrea. Patricia!
She looked in Eve's direction and said, We'll be there. She flipped her phone closed and dropped it in her bag.
Time to go shopping.
I don't want to shop.
Well, I'm driving, so you have no choice.
We need dresses for a party.
I'm not going.
Oh, yes, you are.
This is exactly what you need to take your mind off all this shit.
You're going to pull yourself together, buy a gorgeous dress, and I won't take no for an answer.
Andrea set the shopping bags on the living room floor.
Eve collapsed on the sofa and watched her bustle around the room.
Why don't you go to my room and stretch out? We have several hours before we have to leave. Promise I'll get you up.
A mischievous grin lit Andrea's face. Andrea sat on the couch and quietly wept for her friend. When she had cried herself out, she washed her face. Looking back at herself in the mirror, she vowed, "This time, we make it right."
Alian boarded the ship with Adam's hand clutched in hers. To her astonishment, Gilno stood on the deck. When he saw her, he knelt before her.
"Oh, Great One, my sword is yours, but my life belongs to Athene of the Whitehair."
She stared down at him.
"I accept your sword, Gilno, but Athene is the only one who can accept your love.
'Tis Gilno the Strongheart since the making of my manhood 3 moons ago."
"Rise!"
She looked around as everyone lowered to one knee and swore their lives to her cause, whatever it was to be. She was overwhelmed.
"Rise, all of you! Up on your feet!"
Well underway, Adam took a seat beside her, and they spoke softly of what was to come. She told him of her vision of Merched, Tadok, and Donched. He told her of the invasion in greater detail. They concluded on the third day they must quickly return to the Ardri, but only after Athene was rescued from an unwanted union with a boar-faced Welshman. On the fourth day, they anchored off the river near the village of her youth. Carmag and two others were sent to the warrior clan to deliver a message from Adam. All druids who wish to survive must ready to leave at a moment's notice. The prophecy is in motion. Gather all clans to thee and await her coming. At his words, Orion took flight. Black wings spread wide against a cloudy blue sky. The moon was a full, bright orb. Stars dotted the darkness like living gems in the night sky. A nightbird sang a lulling song. Alian lay beneath her brat, curled in on herself, shivering in her sleep while Adam watched her. He stripped off his clothes and became the wolf.
certainly couldn't be offended at sleeping next to a wolf. He drew close and pressed himself against her back, his nose tucked under auburn curls that smelled of flowers and herbs. Her shivering stopped as their bodies molded together like bark to branch. Snores drifted through the air, and soon he had fallen asleep. Concentration was lost, and the form of the wolf with it. Birds chittered in the trees above their heads, gradually awakening Alian. Her first physical sensation was a warm tingle. Then she was aware that she did not sleep alone. She turned over, jerking back from who or whatever was pressed against her. There he slept, in all his glory, naked. He pulled her back against him. She let her fingers glide through the raven dark hair. He made a low, sound in his throat. She jerked her hand away, but he caught her at the wrist, and without opening his eyes, laid her palm against his chest. She smiled, and her cheeks grew hot. She did not know what possessed her. And in truth, she did not care to stop herself. Her cheeks brushed his. Tenderly, she kissed his closed eyes, cupping his face in her hands. His arms enfolded her. He smelled of heady musk, and she breathed him in. Amber eyes glowed in the dark as he sat up and undressed her. He took his time, purposefully running his palms up her calves. Prickles of excitement darted wildly about her body. Strong fingers grazed the backs of her knees. She arched involuntarily and lifted her arms above her head. She bit her bottom lip to stop a moan from escaping. She wanted to see his face, and when she did, she couldn't stop herself from pressing her lips to his. Her heart pounded, mind racing, their bodies pressed together as one, flesh on flesh. She knew this was how it was supposed to be. He kissed her neck, nibbling at her earlobe, then whispered, "For you, I do not simply pledge my sword. I pledge my every lifetime that the gods will grant me you, Alian, or the other half of my spirit, as it has always been since the beginning of time. You are of me, and I of you." Eve sat up in bed, her hands going to her throat where he'd been kissing her. Ragged breathing filled her ears. She knew who he was. "Oh, God, please, let me be right," she said aloud. She dashed from the bedroom to her purse, snatched the organizer from it, and looked up Ryerson's number. There was no answer. She left a message at the front desk. "I need to see you. It's urgent." The Hollywood Hills were bathed in dappled lavender and brushed with hues of the setting sun. Andrea drove the steep, twisting road to the Rolfings estate. "So where is this place?" Eve fidgeted in the seat. "Driveway's coming up. Don't worry. You look fabulous." Eve fiddled with the dangling silver chain in her neck. Every step through the mall had been a fight. She literally had nothing but the clothes on her back, and they'd had to buy everything. As Andrea waited at the call box for the gate to be opened, she inspected her handiwork. The deep green satin of Eve's dress showed off her creamy skin and made her eyes pop like 10-carat emeralds. She'd been careful to conceal the remainder of the black eye with her makeup, and yet she looked very natural. Andrea could see Alian in those eyes. They argued over the hairstyle, because Eve feared the cut of the dress would expose the birthmark. Finally, Andrea had won and twisted it up. "Come right in." Patricia's voice was energetic, even over the speaker. "Park in the front." "On our way," said Andrea. Short bronze lamps lit the driveway. Long shadows dusted the grounds. The house, nestled in a canyon of cypress and eucalyptus trees, had once belonged to an eccentric actor from the 30s. Patricia and RJ had procured the house as a wedding gift to each other. "This is like a 5-star hotel." Eve's mouth gaped. "Makes my little place look like a bungalow in Compton." Her voice trailed off, and she sniffed. "Let it go, Eve. Just for tonight. You'll rebuild, or you'll buy something better. I promise, this will all get straightened out. Two valets opened the doors to Andrea's car. There were several limos in the driveway, and three black-suited drivers were chatting under a large palm tree. Andrea smoothed the full-length dress over her hips. Its color was like a field of goldenrod, with a slight shimmer of silvery iridescence, which was perfect for her complexion. "Ready?" she asked. Eve took a deep breath. "Yes." A tentative smile crossed her face. Patricia met them at the door, dressed all in white, glittering with sequins. "Welcome to our home." She leaned in and air-kissed each side of Andrea's cheeks. "Eve!" She took her by the shoulders and looked her straight in the eyes. "That dress is to die for. This way. The bar is in the back by the pool. I'll introduce you around." "Your home is exquisite," Eve said. "Thank you. It only took a year of contractor hell to get it this far. This is my favorite piece." Eve approached the life-size Buddha, flanked by two devotees. Their hands were raised in the symbols of blessing. Behind them, and mounted to the ceiling with big cables, was a stone effigy of the Buddha's birth. She read the engraved plaque. On the night of his birth, his mother entered the Garden of Lombai with her ladies. The Sala tree bent down to her. The queen held the branch and gazed at the heavens. At that moment, Buddha was born out of her side. He took seven steps, one for each quarter of the heavens. With each step, a lotus flower bloomed in his wake. Buddha announced this would be his last physical lifetime, and he would pluck out, by the roots, sorrow caused by birth and death. "It's beautiful, isn't it?" Patricia asked. "It is, Patricia. This is incredible," Eve responded. The hair at the base of Andrea's neck stood on end. "Is that Celtic music?" "It is," Patricia replied happily. "In honor of the men of the hour. Come on, I'll introduce you." They strolled to the back of the house and through double French doors. Eve's hand went to her mouth as they seemed to step into another world. The pool wasn't the standard concrete monstrosity. It looked like a natural piece of landscaping. Boulders and rocks surrounded it as a waterfall cascaded into it, adding to the rhythm of the harpist. "Andrea, Eve," RJ swaggered toward them, a tumbler of whiskey in one hand and a fat cigar in the other. At the name, Ryerson's head jerked up. He lost the grip on his glass. It hit the ground with a crashing shatter. His cheeks flushed hot, and he began to apologize profusely. His eyes met hers, until a white-clad staff member cleaning up the mess cut off his view. This was it. He wouldn't let his clumsiness prevent him from speaking to her. He found her gaze once more and made his way toward her. Eve's breath snagged in her throat. Even though there were no remembrances of him in this lifetime, she was positive who Ryerson had been. Adam of the Amber Eyes, Alian's love, her life, her reason for pushing forward. He stood in front of her, towering like a statue of an ancient god. He took her hands and, strangely enough, bowed at the waist, brushing his lips over her knuckles. "At last," he said. "You two know each other?" Patricia's mouth hung open. "We do." "Very well," Eve smiled. Her sandy lashes dropped, and she nodded her head in shyness. From several paces away, Craig observed not Ryerson or Eve, but Andrea.
"Stunning," he thought.
"And something more." She stared back, shivering visibly. He moved with the grace of a trained athlete.
"Introduce me, old man, or get a room."
He chuckled a bit, embarrassed by his bold tone. Eve's cheeks flushed. "Craig Bellamy?" "Eve McCormick. And..." RJ jumped in.
"Andrea McMurray, Craig."
Her face was alight with a glow that seemed tangible. He reached for her extended hand. A tremor of emotion seized him, and he released her. I have to ask the staff to make a couple of, changes in the seating. Be right back. Patricia grinned like a Cheshire cat and dashed off. Ian Fitzsimmons tipped his glass to no one in particular and emptied it in one swallow. He set his glass on the bar, not sure why he wanted to help the woman with Ryerson. The desire to protect her like a father protects a child tugged at his heart. It made no sense. But he accepted, long ago, that these types of feelings were always correct. He flagged RJ's attention and wagged a finger at him. Who is she? RJ looked somewhat puzzled. Eve McCormick. She runs some sort of research on past lives. Ian nodded. He pulled a checkbook from his breast pocket. $500,000 to start. You make sure she has whatever she needs. He scratched out the check, then replaced the book in his jacket pocket and pulled the ring from his pinky. He rolled the check and slipped it through the ring. You be the delivery boy. I'm slipping out the back. I'd like to meet with her. Set it up for whatever's convenient for her. Say next week? Where are you off to? RJ asked. I have a plane to catch. But give the lads my congratulations again. He emptied his refilled glass. Ryerson held Eve's hand under the table. Casual conversation and toast after toast prevented serious conversation. He couldn't bring himself to eat more than a few bites of food. The harpist played a soft, old song with nimble fingers. Will you dance with me? Eve nodded, and they left the table. Patricia's voice carried across the gathering. Perfect couple, aren't they? Ryerson smiled at the thought of them as a couple. He took her in his arms, and they glided across the patio. His hands felt enormous against hers. Small but strong, he thought. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to have our session. Is everything well? I mean, are you feeling better? He enjoyed watching her furrow her brow as she thought, I'm better. He knew she was holding something uncertain in her mind. When you shook my hand in the office, it was strange. Truly, I don't completely understand it. Her voice trailed off. You called me Adam, did I? Right funny. As you're named Eve. Her eyes sparkled in the candlelight, and he simply wanted to kiss her. I've been having these dreams. Actually, there's more to it than you might think. And you'll likely think I'm nuts, but I've been waiting for you. He pulled her close. They whispered of Alian and of Adam and of themselves, drawing distinctions and similarities in their dreams. Patricia insisted Andrea and Eve stay. It was impulsive, and unlike either woman to accept. Four guest houses dotted the property, and she doled out keys with instructions on each one's location. You four work it out for yourselves. Head that way. She pointed toward the lit pathway. It was well past 2 a.m. when Craig and Andrea took the left path, and Eve and Ryerson took the right. Ryerson's fingers grazed Eve's wrist. You know, he never wanted to restrain her. The sadness in his face was clear, and she sighed. Alian was a stubborn woman, and she loved Adam with all of herself. He nodded his agreement and grew quiet when they reached the first guest house on the path. Stay with me? A shy smile crossed her face. He scooped her up into his arms, and she sighed with anticipation surging through her. She wrapped her arms around his neck, looking into his golden eyes, and pressed her lips almost innocently to his. The kiss was sweet and tingly. She never wanted it to end. Just as they were about to enter the guest house, RJ barreled down the walkway toward them. Ryerson turned, Eve in his arms, at the sound of running footsteps. Glad I caught up with you. I almost forgot to give you this. She took the offering with a thank you, though she didn't know what it was. You two have a good time. RJ winked at them with a sultry gleam in his eyes. Eve, we'll talk in a few days and set up a meeting for your new benefactor. He sauntered back toward the main house. Do you know whose ring this is? She ran her finger over the crest. as she slipped it off the check. It's Alian's father's. But how? Then she looked at the check. I'm going to die. 500,000? Now that's a donation. And now more than ever, I need it. With the lawyers and, well, it's not important in this moment. What is important is getting that door open. She kissed him again, and he stuck the key awkwardly in the lock and swung the door open. She was deaf to the sounds that emanated from her throat and ecstatically blind to her surroundings. All that mattered were those amber eyes and the untamed wildness she felt in her spirit. Eve never wanted him to release her. Their souls were connected, bodies rhythmically in motion as they spoke each other's names. His hands roamed freely, showering her in warm caresses. Every touch, every kiss was a lightning strike of ecstasy. She lit up from the inside. She breathed him in. The rich scent of him mingled with hers. If only she could capture that tangy, sweet fragrance. If only she could bottle it, carry it with her always. She would never lose him again. He was hers. When they finally slept, they dreamt of each other. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Mark of a Druid. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact me at my websites, themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Until next time, take care.